You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Thelma Adams has been a film critic for Us Weekly since 2000, and she had the same job at the New York Post before that. Now she's written her first novel, Playdate, which has nothing to do with the movies. It's a look beneath the surface of a comfortable suburban family's life, published by St. Martin's Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Thelma Adams back to our show. Hi, Thelma.
Hi, Leonard. It's a thrill. I'm really happy to come here and not be criticizing something.
well, we may talk a bit about movies later. writing for a weekly magazine and before that a daily newspaper, how do you manage to write a novel? Were you inspired at all by James A.G. accomplished with writing A Death in the Family?
I was inspired simply because, you know, certain writers have to write, and I'm one of them. And I love writing fiction, and I love writing the long form, because what you start out with, which is a simple idea, like what would happen if you had shampoo meets Mr. Mom? And then you sit down and start writing, and you get all these rich characters that start talking to you and having their own way and pulling you this way and that. And that's the exciting part.
So is this shampoo meets Mr. Mom?
In a way, it is. I think that was a starting point.
Well, you had studied writing at Columbia.
Yeah, I have an MFA. In fact, I have a novel in my drawer from that period that I did, you know, before I even was a full-time film critic. So, in fact, the novel came first.
Not this novel.
Writing fiction came first. Writing poetry came before that.
Although I'd imagine just the fact that you have to write you just have to write on demand, that actually makes it easier to write for yourself.
I think that's completely true. People might not understand that, but when you are at Us Weekly or at the Post, I used to have to go and see a movie at noon and I'd see it at noon in 42nd Street, and then I'd have to have a review in by 3. Sometimes those reviews are the best reviews you've written because they're so pure.
But you have to find a voice.
And the voice is there. You know, that's the other thing that you get from being a film critic is that you write and write and write and write, and you have to have a voice.
But I'm sure also just thinking about movies and analyzing movies got you thinking about how to tell a story.
I hope so.
Well, because so many films fail at telling a story in any kind of coherent way.
I know. And I think that I am, the way I am a movie critic, I'm much more about the script than I am about the visuals.
You set your novel in Encinitas, which outside of San Diego.
Lovely town.
You grew up in Southern California?
Yes, I did. I grew up. I was born on Sunset Boulevard. Fate.
Wow.
I was raised in San Diego and went to Berkeley. I didn't ever live in Encinitas, but it's one of those lovely little towns. You know, it's the thing. It's a beautiful little Zen town, but underneath the surface, people live very complicated lives.
You think it's changed much since you left?
Now, this Encinitas, I never lived in. San Diego, yes. San Diego was a sleepy town when I was growing up. And now it's a traffic-filled, you know, megalopolis that's, in a way, part of Los Angeles.
But the one thing that it has had consistently is great weather, which you unfortunately call mind-numbingly perfect.
I know. That's why I live in New York. I love snow. I love unpredictability. I love fall. I love the first crocus that comes up in spring. I really am a four-season girl.
In Robbie Bates' new play, the family keeps on asking their daughter why she would want to leave the perfect weather of California, in this case Palm Springs, for the snow and the changing season. They don't get that changing season thing.
My family, I think, would say the same thing. I mean, my father was from Brooklyn, and he, you know, was born in Brooklyn, and he died in California, a Brooklynite. But I think they wonder why the coats, the boots, the snow, the thing. And I can't answer.
Although today, as I was slipping down the street on my way to work, I wondered myself.
Right.
The book is a send-up of suburbia. Is Encinitas at all similar to towns in upstate New York like Hyde Park, where you now live?
I think that there are similarities. I think my next book will take place in Hyde Park and Millbrook and the surrounding areas of upstate. And I think the people won't be all that different. I think I saw a situation in San Diego. And also there was a way that I could look at San Diego from a distance and recreate it. I studied the Witch Creek fire, the fire that is central to this book, the Santa Ana fire. And I studied it in a way that was completely detached because it didn't happen to me. I wasn't trying to remember things that happened to me.
Well, the fire, of course, really is about how nature has an impact on the way people behave.
Oh, definitely.
But, of course, here you don't talk about the impact of the continuous barrage of snowfall.
Well, maybe my next book, the continual. I mean, surely there are authors who do. Cheever was certainly influenced by those chilly winters.
I read that you and your husband left Brooklyn expressly to raise your kids in Hyde Park. Don't many people move to Brooklyn to raise their kids?
Well, I guess we went.
At least if you judge from my neighborhood.
I know. We had a beautiful house in Kensington with, the two kids and the cats and the whole thing. Love the neighborhood. I think one of the major reasons we moved was to raise my husband, who really wanted to get out of the city and loves the country.
Well, go ahead.
And then it was in fact a good thing for the children.
Well, your main character, Lance, is a stay-at-home dad.
Yes.
Your husband?
Well, oddly enough, he is, but he's no Lance. My husband is a telecommuter for a major corporation, so he's at home working. Yeah, he's wearing his overalls, and he may not have shaved today, but he has a major job, and he gets a lot of recognition for it. Lance is really a guy who's not a professional guy, but he's a terrific father.
Now, Darlene, his wife, is an ambitious workaholic. She has a chain of diners that's meant to be a haven for frustrated mothers. What do you think the tiger mother would think of Darlene?
I think the tiger mother would not have a lot of patience for a lot of people. I mean, all due props for the tiger mother. I think that in my own life, I really am ambitious for my children, I think. I really want them to do well, but in the thing that they're good at. I want them, if they show an interest in theater, I encourage it. If they show an interest in Descartes, I encourage it. I don't try to funnel them into one thing or another. And I think that is something that you see in Playdate, this idea that you cannot, that you have to nurture your kids to be more who they are, not who you want them to be.
But you also wanted it to be funny.
Yeah. I think that in that case, I keep going back to P.G. Wodehouse because I think he writes the best, funniest dialogue. And so I looked at P.G. Wodehouse and Evelyn Waugh, and, I love writing funny dialogue that then has a sting.
My guest is Thelma Adams, who has been Us Weekly's film critic since 2000. Before that, she reviewed films for the New York Post, and she's written for The Oprah Magazine, Marie Claire, More Interview, New York Times, International Herald Tribune, Cosmo, Self. Now she's written a novel, at least the novel that's published. The previous novel was not published?
The previous novel was not published. Maybe someday, but the next novel and the next novel.
Playdate. It's published by St. Martin's Press and the Thomas Dunn Books imprint. Can we take a few minutes to talk about the Oscars?
Oh, let's. It's a very exciting year because there were so many good movies.
Were you surprised by some of the nominations?
No, because I'm such an Oscarologist. I think, I was relieved that Winter's Bone made the 10. I was surprised that Winter's Bone did so strongly. Jennifer Lawrence, John Hawkes, both getting acting noms. It's interesting to see the power of The Social Network recede, because that's really this week's discussion is after the SAGs, is the King's Speech the front runner? Is it going to get everything? Has The Social
Network? Well, that's the Weinstein effect.
That's the Weinstein effect. But they're on a comeback. Even they are no longer the Weinsteins they once were.
On the other hand, my favorite film, Carlos, wasn't nominated.
I love that movie.
Ryan Gosling wasn't nominated, although he gave a great performance in Blue Valentine, an incredible
You and I are on the same page in both things. I mean, I think that, you know, I came in and said, I've even written about this, that the Weinstein Company threw Ryan Gosling under the bus because they distributed Blue Valentine as well as The King's Speech, and Colin Firth was the front runner. So they were going to put their money behind Colin Firth. And Ryan Gosling gave one of the most emotionally naked, free, interesting, flexible performances. I love that movie. And yet you have this situation in Blue Valentine, and I would say in Black Swan too, that if you make a movie that not everybody loves, it's a challenge in terms of Oscars.
But great acting is great acting. Michelle Williams was nominated, although...
Well, because there's room.
She's a fabulous actress. I don't think she has a chance.
No, you know, this is the year of the... It's the Portman-Benning race, and every other week you'll go. Right now it seems like Portman has the edge by a baby bump. You know, that seems to be the feel.
I liked the film. Was it The Kids Are All Right?
I love The Kids.
Yeah, I thought it was very nice. I don't know whether Annette Bening was really any more important to that film than four or five other people in it. In fact, the kids were
terrific.
Mia, whatever her name is, because I can't pronounce it.
Wasikowska?
Yeah, she's extraordinary.
She played Alice.
She was in Treatment, and she was amazing in that as well.
I think she's really someone to watch, and obviously she didn't get a supporting actress. That's a really tricky thing, too, because I feel... If you're looking at snubs, that Lisa Cholodenko, who directed that movie, and you get these great performances, and Annette Bening, and Mark Ruffalo, and Julianne Moore, and the children, not so children, the teenagers, were all so good. And she's going to get credit for the script, but she directed it. So when we talk about the snubbing of women directors, I think you've got to consider that. On the other hand, I am not so blind to not notice that we have very strong directors this year.
What kind of batting average have you had over the years on picking the winners?
I think I'm practiced. I think that I run between, 80 to 100%. I would put it, a good year I get 98%.
98%. Well, that's pretty good. That's
good
also
year.
Because you probably have people telling you, well, so-and-so is a shoo-in.
Well, I talk to people. I have inside dope. I really, it's become such a science that there are so many blogs to read, that there are people. I'm part of goldderby.com where I'm constantly saying, looking at the SAG, looking at the, producers' guilds, looking at the various things and updating it. I mean, right now, I'm very, very happy that Melissa Leo looks like she's ahead in the supporting actress race. What a great movie The Fighter was. What a great movie True Grit was, came in at the end.
I'm always asked, what novels have you read recently that you enjoy? And it's very hard for me to answer because I don't read anymore just for pleasure. I read with the thought of preparing for a show. And I wonder about you. Do you ever watch a movie just for fun, or is your mind always so the review comes after you've just sat and watched it with a kind of an open mind?
I like to do it that way. I like to go, like when I went to the Toronto Film Festival and I saw Black Swan, I saw it, and the reason it's number one on my list this year is because it knocked me out. I saw it and I was transported.
And other people hate that film.
Yeah, I know. And, I have friends who come up to me and tell me how bad it was, and I'm like, no. It's the kind of thing where I love that movie. And what do I watch for pleasure? I watch a lot of BBC Mysteries. I sit and
You don't just take a rest your eyes when you're not working?
No, and I read. And I read for pleasure, too.
And what about your writing regimen? You wrote this novel in your spare time.
In my ample spare time. I write in the morning, and I write in very concentrated chunks, and I don't sit and worry over any words. I just write a chunk, and then the book comes out, and then... It's totally collaborative, editor, agent, friends who give me feedback, and then I write again.
the film companies, the filmmakers would prefer that you not watch films on your home television set, no matter how big the screen is. And you're in, you're all the way upstate.
Right.
You don't schlep in every day.
I schlep in all the time. I am majorly schlepping in and watching movies. And most of the movies I watch in screening rooms in Midtown. I do watch some upstate, but, you know, I have to say, I have a 55-65-inch screen. It's very big. It's very comfortable. And I watched Carlos on that screen, and I adore Carlos. I think best actor. They were robbed. It's one of the richest, smartest, most complicated, you know, and it was good to be able to not have to sit, you know, in a theater for 5 hours like it was school, but to watch it an hour and a half, put it aside, the next night watch another hour and a half, loved it thoroughly, wasn't distracted for a minute.
It was like reading a very rich novel.
Right.
And Thelma Adams has written a novel called Playdate. It is published by St. Martin's Press and the Thomas Dunn Books imprint. And I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
A pleasure, a real pleasure. Thank you.